Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, May 9, 2017. Two bodyguards of the first vice president are injured in another deadly attack on Juba Bor Road.
This morning, we wake up at around 9:30, then we heard about gunshot. And after that, then we received a call from Jongole that a convoy of vice was traveling, and then it fell into some gangs who happened to attack the vehicle.
And residents of Yei Town say government soldiers killed civilians in cold blood.
The market was attacked. Four of them were killed. Their dead bodies burnt in a hut. It's just a tragic moment and a sad moment for us. In fact, what is going on will never please anybody. And it hurts.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. At least two bodyguards of the first vice president, Taban Dengai, who were injured as their convoy was traveling from Juba to Jonglei State today. The first vice president was not in the convoy as he was traveling by air to Bor. Terekeka State authorities say armed men opened fire on the convoy at Jemeza on the Juba Bor Road. A Jonglei official says the wounded bodyguards have been airlifted to Juba, as we hear from Nabil Biajo in the capital.
Mr. Guy was traveling from Juba to Jonglei to head up efforts for reconciling warring communities in Jonglei and Boma states. The border between the newly created states has been the scene of several deadly clashes between youth in both communities. Terkeka State Information Minister Philip Lado says the first vice president's convoy reached the eastern side of the river today, and before crossing into Jonglei, it came under heavy fire.
This morning, we wake up at around 9:30, then we heard about gunshot. And after that, then we received a call from Jongole that a convoy of vice was traveling, and then it fell into some gangs who happened to attack the vehicle.
Jongole State Information Minister Jacob Akech confirmed the incident, saying Guy's bodyguards were wounded.
When the first vice president convoy passed Jemeza, between Jemeza and Sudan Safari, they got ambushed there, and two people were wounded, and some car was shot.
Akech says the attackers were from Jemeza County of Terkeka State.
It is unfortunate for the vehicle of the first vice president to be ambushed by the youth from Mandari or the county of Jemeza, which is Terkeka State. It's very unfortunate, and this needs high attention in the country.
Akech says the assailants are the same people responsible for much of the insecurity along the border.
This is something more than what they were telling us, because they were talking about cattle camp youth disagree in the cattle camp in the highland. But now people are in the town or in government place, and this is what happened today.
Guy spokesman Dixon Gatluak says unknown gunmen tried to stop the convoy from reaching Bor.
What happened, it was not a big fight. It was just bullets they sprayed a bit on the vehicle, but our forces, our protection unit, managed to penetrate, and as we speak, they arrive in war.
Gatluak says it was three soldiers in the convoy who were wounded. Just last Friday, at least 30 passengers were killed at Jemeza and Sudan Safari by unknown gunmen as the commuters were traveling from Bor to Juba. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biajo in Juba.
More than 20 people were killed in Gogorial State during intercommunal fighting over the past 4 days. They say the members of Apuk and Agwak communities are clashing over a shared border. The state information minister says SPLA soldiers have been deployed along the border to prevent further fighting. As Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba, a local activist says the proliferation of arms among civilians leads to deadly conflicts.
Simon Matuaro, chairperson of the Gogorial Youth Union, says 27 people were killed and 38 others wounded after the fighting between the members of the Apuk and Agwa communities. Mature accuses government officials of causing the violence, but did not name names.
So that fighting yesterday caused a lot of casualties. because many houses were burned from both sides, and also we lost so many lives, especially lives of youth.
Gogrial Information Minister Ariech Mayara Riech confirms the fighting took place, but says only 3 people were killed and 7 others wounded.
This is the official information we have from our security personnel who are there on the ground. But the government forces, because the government deployed the forces there between these communities, they have managed to disperse those criminals. And they ran away in a disarray, and the situation now is under control.
But Machar says the government failed to intervene while the 2 communities were fighting for 4 days. He says national troops should be dispatched to intervene so peace is restored. Minister Rich says the 2 communities have carried out cattle raids on each other for several years, which have become more deadly in recent years due to the proliferation of guns in the hands of civilians. And Ariech accuses some officials from both communities of providing weapons to civilians.
It's too much issue among themselves. Other thing involved, maybe there are one of the communities between these 2 claims the land from other community, you know. And the other community is disputing that idea that they are occupying the land of the other community illegally.
Ariech says gunmen on both sides, no, the government will not try to settle border disputes now. William Maybur, a youth leader from Apu community, says both sides need new state leaders who can restore peace in the area.
People are dying now, so there must be a change to the leadership.
Agua community youth leader Paulino Aken admits some in his community are armed, but denies getting any help from government officials, but says they have a right to defend their territory against cattle raiders.
Our youth were already been with the arm after they have realized this has been done many times, several times. Some were reported their arm and some were hidden with their arm. They have run away. After they have seen that the people have been attacked for several times, they came back to their area to protect their territory.
Akwach Ajang Nyanom, chairperson of the Juba Bay Civil Society Alliance, says he is deeply concerned about the intercommunal violence, and today in Juba called on the national government officials to intervene.
We need the government to take the measures of protecting life and properties by stopping the fight. Do you want to tell me that the youth of Abuaga and Afuk are more armed than government? Or you want to tell me the youth of Bod and Pibod are more stronger than government? Then why should you have government then?
Ajang says he is convinced the government has the ability to stop the killings and should do so immediately. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Residents of Yei Town say suspected government forces killed at least 7 people in Yei Town in 2 separate incidents this week. The residents say government soldiers randomly shot at civilians in a market. A church leader condemned the killings, saying a recent agreement signed between state officials and local armed group is obviously not holding. Tito Justin has the report for VOA from Juba.
Residents say the first incident happened on Sunday in Payawa, an area 9 miles from Yei Town along the Yei Kaya Road. A relative of one of the victims who declined to be identified for his safety says government soldiers went on a rampage.
The market was attacked. 4 of them were killed. Their dead bodies burnt in a hut. So it's just a tragic moment and a sad moment for us. In fact, what is going on will never please anybody. And it hurts because those who commit such atrocities are not even brought to book.
The relative of the deceased says no one is investigating the killings. He says his relative was shot and killed at close range while on his way to ask for permission from authorities in Payawa to transport honey outside that area. Residents say other suspected government soldiers attacked civilians yesterday in Otogo County. An eyewitness who prefers to be identified only as Lodinya for security reasons survived the attack some 14 miles from Yei Town. Lodinya says he saw soldiers kill a 60-year-old unarmed man.
So they went there, scared. The people who are dispersed left everything in the market. They saw three people. One is an elder. Everything has been looted. Those two items left in the market were collected. And it has given us a doubt. Do we know they are national army? They can move.
Lord Inya wants the international community to step in and restore peace in South Sudan.
We have a very serious plea to the UN peacekeeping forces in South Sudan, the UNMISS. They only concentrate in the towns. And the leading soldiers being deployed in rural areas to kill indiscriminately innocent people.
SPLA Deputy Spokesman Colonel Santo Domichi denies government forces killed civilians in Yei. He says the SPLA was deployed in the area to protect civilians, not hurt them.
The SPLA does not attack civilians. Because even by common sense, how does SPLA move with all the military arsenal to attack civilians who have got no weapons? This is just a political campaign just to tarnish the image of the SPLA before the international community.
The killings come a week after Yei River officials said they reached an agreement with a group of armed men in the state. A church leader from Yei confirmed the killings of civilians in Yei, calling it a crime against humanity. Kemis Kennedy, a pastor of the African Inland Church, says attacks on civilians in Yei shows that a peace deal state leaders supposedly reached with a local armed group is not genuine.
Legally, the army should fight another army. And this goes to everybody, not even to one person, not to any individual group, but to everyone in South Sudan.
Last month, civil society activists and Yei residents say the relationship between the army and civilians had worsened and called on state officials to redeploy soldiers far from the civilian population to prevent more cases of killings, lootings, and rape. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The editor-in-chief of the Juba Monitor says South Sudan's national security detained two female journalists working for the newspaper on Monday for 4 hours. Alfred Taban says his newspaper is facing a heavy crackdown by government security operatives. Taban says there is no freedom of the press in South Sudan because the national security continues to remove news articles from his paper that he is about to publish.
Two of my female journalists were detained for about 4 hours.
Why were they detained?
They had gone to the Ministry of Finance for an interview. Before they went to see the official, the undersecretary of the ministry, they took the photo of each other. Then some security people came and said they were security and these ladies should go with them. So they went and detained them in an office of the security in the ministry.
Is it a crime to take photos in Juba?
Of course it is not a crime to take a photograph anywhere except this is a military installation. Yes, but this was the Ministry of Finance and they were in an office. They were not even outside.
What happened at the end of the day? Where are they right now?
They were released after 4.5 hours.
You are experiencing these problems every day, that one day you hear about journalists being arrested. But the government spokesman, who is also the information minister, told us last week that there's freedom of speech in South Sudan. The presidential spokesman, Atenyuek Ateny, has also been telling the world that journalists in South Sudan are free. Why is this happening to your reporters? Are you being targeted?
Of course, there is very little freedom of speech in this country. When they say that there is freedom, they are lying. This is not true. Because, I mean, besides this arresting journalists for doing their work like this, even in the printing press, we have security removing articles. I mean, just today, in our newspaper, on page 4, there is a net space which is empty because they removed an article from there.
Could you tell us more about the article that was removed from your paper? What was it about?
It was an article about an opinion piece by one of our columnists. He wrote something like an open letter to the president complaining about the treatment of people in prison. And so I think the security did not like it, so they removed the entire article.
And how do you operate in a country like that where your newspaper is either confiscated or some articles are removed or it's either closed down. How do you operate in a country like that?
Well, you know who I am. We are going to resist this kind of things, and we are not going to run away. I think this thing is meant to drive us out of this country, but we are not going to go anywhere. We are going to stay here. We are not going anywhere.
I mean, are you in business? Are you making any profit out of this? Because it sounds like you are heavily censored.
Yes, there is a lot of censorship, and making money is out of question. But we are just barely surviving.
How do they get access to the dummies of your newspaper before you publish it? How do they get access to it?
They go to the printing press and they wait there. So when we present the work and we leave, then they come in and go through all the articles and they begin to remove those ones that they don't like.
That's veteran South Sudanese journalist Alfred Taban, who owns the Juba Monitor newspaper. He was speaking to me from Juba yesterday. South Sudan government dramatically increased fees for registration and licensing of international non-governmental organizations working in the country trying to help the needy. International non-governmental organizations must now pay the government $3,300, up from $600. The Registrar General of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission says the higher fee paid by humanitarian agencies is going to help them do their work better. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
The government claims the higher fees will raise money to help the government coordinate the work of the humanitarian agencies in South Sudan. Deng Tong Kenjok is the Registrar General of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission.
It is coming to effect immediately, but when the expiration of the current certificate ends, then the renewal will be, it will get an effect while they are renewing their certificate. They are not called to register, but those whom their certificate expired and they are coming for renewal, then it will be effective immediately.
The government will charge national organizations $500, up from the $450 it was charging. International and national aid groups say the government has failed to give an adequate reason for raising registration fees and say the decision will likely force agencies to scale down their operations. Henry Taban heads the Rural Action Against Hunger, a national organization that provides emergency response programs to distribute non-food items and peace-building activities across parts of South Sudan.
I think the loophole we have seen in our situation here is that the authority did not do enough research. Because if you ask the authority, how did you come with this figure? You don't get a very convincing statement.
Taban says local agencies operating on meager resources will be hurt by the higher fees.
Now, increasing this the registration to 500 would mean straining even the little overhead cost that has been levied on us as national NGOs in terms of, you know, maintaining offices, you know, fuel and so forth, which is not always enough. Mm. So we feel that the authority that came out with that figure should have first of all sat down, you know, with their stakeholders or their partners.
Pius Ojara, secretary of the South Sudan NGO Forum, a consortium of national and international organizations operating in the country, says the decision will hamper the important work of agencies across the country.
We are not happy with that. We want to discuss it with them, understand where this is coming from, and basically say, is affecting our members negatively, and if it can be reconsidered. Donors have instructed that they don't support it. Their money should not be used for paying this.
Ojara says NGO forum officials are speaking with the government officials to try to reduce the registration and license fees. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at fistula patients in South Sudan. That story is coming up when we...
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
What is your favorite game and how is it played?
Cricket.
there's a batsman and the bowler. The bowler throws the ball to the batsman, and the batsman tries to hit the ball as far as possible.
Yeah, actually, the favorite game, I like it. I like kickboxing, but when I was in Sudan there, my dream is just to be a big kickboxer. That's what I like. Yes, it's not about just to kick people, just because I think it's just a game, but I like it. Because me, I like something, can enjoy the play. It's just a game, yeah.
My favorite game is chess. How it is played is we have a chessboard where pieces are set. It is now two kingdoms fighting against each other.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment. And today we are talking about obstetric fistula. At least 39 fistula patients were treated at Awil Civil Hospital in Awil Town. The surgeries follow a mobilization campaign by state hospital personnel in northern Bahr al-Ghazal last month. The patients are among 150 registered women across the state who need operations to fix the painful disease. Abraham Agod has the story for VOA from Awil.
The United Nations Population Fund, in conjunction with the French medical organization Médecins Sans Frontières and the State Ministry of Health, are carrying out fistula operations in Awil. After health officials registered patients, a delegation of doctors from the UN and the Ministry of Health are performing the operations. Dr. Sahid Ahmed from Nigeria says they are in Awil for the next 2 weeks because they want to see patients of fistula return to normal life.
The general situation of women is really pathetic in the sense that we all know that pregnancy is not a disease. So if you are having something that is a joy to the family, it should not affect your health. But here we are, women in the process of their willingness to have children, they end up having a lot of difficulties to the extent they secure this disease with continuous leaking urine and in most cases with other social implications.
Dr. Said says women they have met so far tell them that they have been isolated in their community because of their bad smell. He says the disease is avoidable when one understands the principles of how fistula is contracted. He says some of the cases involve lack of proper hygiene, especially among poverty-stricken women and girls between the ages of 14 and 45. Traditional birth practices and lack of health facilities contribute to the large number of cases. Teresa Kurdumu is undergoing treatment for fistula at Awil Civil Hospital. She has suffered from the disease since 2007 and separated from her husband because of her sickness. She says she will undergo an operation at the hospital with the hope of resuming a normal life again soon.
Everyone has abandoned me because of this sickness, especially urine leakage. Because I am sick, my husband abandoned me. The rest of the family have rejected me, except my mother.
Luka Lualaleujo is the reproductive health coordinator at the State Ministry of Health in Awil. He says women have endured many health complications as a result of the sickness.
The situation is really very worse in northern Bahr al-Ghazal. In northern Bahr al-Ghazal, well, we have three campaigns. This campaign is the third campaign. We mobilized 159 mothers. 2 years campaigns, we have 120 mothers who are operated and they're back to their home with a normal life. Currently, we have 39 mothers who are admitted in tents by MSF, and 11 are operated. 28 are still, but their operation is going on. They will be operated very soon.
Aleu says their research reveals 99% of patients with fistula have been divorced by their husbands and abandoned by their husbands' families. Obstetric fistula is an abnormal opening between a woman's female part and bladder and or rectum, through which her urine or feces continually leak. It can happen after lengthy or complicated childbirth or when adequate medical care is not available. It usually results in lifelong pain. The condition causes many African women to become social outcasts in their communities. For VOA News, I am Abraham Agoth reporting in Awil.
As the world celebrated International Midwifery Day last week, South Sudanese midwives in Torit say they are seeing decrease in maternal and child-related deaths in South Sudan. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Torit.
South Sudanese midwife Abuni Beatrice Musungu helps deliver a baby at Torit State Hospital. She and two other nurses encourage the mother, who is experiencing intense labor pain, to use her stomach muscles to push down. 7 minutes later, her baby boy is delivered.
Here she is administering vitamin K. That's where you can hear the baby's crying.
The infant is quickly given vitamin K intramuscular to prevent bleeding and eye ointment to prevent new bones from contracting an eye infection. The baby scores a 9 in 1 minute and a 10 5 minutes later, meaning the child is perfectly healthy. It is second healthy baby delivered so far today at Torit State Hospital. Beatrice explains what happens immediately after delivery.
Now we are done with the deliveries and the rest. We are now for our infection prevention. There are 3 steps which we are doing. We have 1 bucket for disinfecting, where we put an instrument in the bucket. We mix chlorine with the water, which is 5%. We mostly shock it for 10 minutes. And then from 10 minutes, we remove from jig to soapy water. From soapy water, we rinse to clean water. From clean water, we rinse it up. This is the first thing we do after deliveries, so that when the next person who is coming for delivery will get our equipment ready. It's very important to have delivery in the hospital.
She says the mother is monitored in the labor room for 24 hours in case of any post-delivery complications. Isuru Lona is one of the mothers who delivered. She says she is very happy because she gave birth in the hands of a qualified midwife.
The very important thing is for us women to deliver in the hospital, actually, it is a very good way. In order that when you deliver in the hospital, in case of bleeding, whether there's too much bleeding when you are going to deliver, then those midwives will help you with that one. You will not face any problem.
Angela Njuru is a Kenyan midwife working in Torit Hospital. She was brought to South Sudan under a skills exchange program sponsored by IGAD. Njuru says she is glad mothers are able to deliver healthy babies at the hospital.
A mother comes and we deliver them successfully, with or without complications. I feel very good and I'm proud about that.
The International Midwifery Day was created to raise awareness about the role of midwives in preventing maternal and child-related deaths. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Bambe Makeimot by Kero in Yambio. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for sharing your evening with us. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Bambe makaimo moyagaru asaki. Bambe makaimo moyagaru asaki. Zaman motoro zede matoturu dumara. Zaman matara zede matoturu dumara. Bambe mkaimo moya hilo wasaki.